Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line, Jerry Guidetti, and Jerry certainly supports Radio Liberty, but she's one of the most delightful new people we have behind us. Jerry is a genetic engineer. She was trained in biosciences and had worked actually in genetic engineering for many years until she became aware of the fact that there are potential dangers in what we're doing. We're actually experimenting with the very substance of life, certainly in animals, but specifically in plants. And, of course, that was one of the things she was concerned in. And, of course, she eventually formed the was something known as the ARC Institute, and she has her own seeds, and we'll be telling a little bit more about the ARC Institute later. But right now, I want to introduce you, if you haven't heard Jerry before, why she is becoming rapidly one of our favorite guests. Jerry, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Dr. Stan. Nice to be back.
Well, now, of course, we were going to talk today about this whole subject of genetic engineering, which is really one of the most challenging things that's going on today. This is really exciting science. The only trouble is there a potential to get into trouble with genetic engineering?
Well, if you're posing the question, I'll tell you absolutely, hands down, we can get in trouble. And yes, it is a potentially good science. I mean, that's why I went into it. My main goal in going for my doctorate when I first began, and no one would pick up the idea, was how to increase the resistance of plant cells to solar radiation, because I saw the amount of solar radiation getting through being so going up so exponentially that pretty soon we would be in trouble in terms of our plants burning up and not being able to make oxygen for the planet and also food. So yes, if you take a look at some potential uses, increasing nutrition for the world's hungry and all of that, yes indeed, genetic engineering, like everything else, starts out with these great ideas and these great goals, but sometimes we do things, Dr. Stan, because we could. And sometimes the things that we do are not necessarily altruistic. And that's what I saw beginning to happen. It is a field, by the way, with tremendous amount of pollution and worrisome pollution at that, in some of the chemicals that we used and in all of the plastics we use and so on. But more importantly, when I saw the direction corporations were beginning to go with some of the technologies that we had, that is what frightened me the most, because once again, we kind of lost our way, or many corporations began to lose their way, and in as much as they presented this as a technology that could feed the world, that could make the blind see and eliminate blindness in nutrient-deprived areas of the world and so on, in as much as it's only represented that way, development since 1998 especially told me that we are in grave and serious danger of misusing this technology to the detriment of mankind.
And I think that's really the thing. Of course, nobody's going to say that we have another agenda. We'd like, of course, to put mankind into a situation where we could starve literally billions of people to death. I mean, if anybody said that, why, of course, you'd say they're crazy, or right. We're certainly never going to give them any ability to control the food chain. But, you know, people are never going to necessarily tell you what their real goals are. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti, and I think you'll find this fascinating program is I was finding her a fascinating guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And, of course, this is the time when we certainly want to introduce to you Jerry Guidetti, who's with the ARC Institute, and Jerry is a genetic scientist. She was into genetic engineering, and she eventually, of course, gave up what she was doing full-time, and now has produced something called the ARC Institute, where she grows her own seeds and makes them available to people, because she feels that we're going to need this sometime in the future, that genetic engineering is going to actually transform the whole agricultural industry, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. So I'm going to play the devil's advocate. And I was just reading an article by a woman who leads a very large medical organization. And she was saying how wonderful genetic engineering is, because certainly in Africa, why we're going to give the people there the opportunity to be able to increase their crops tenfold, and to do away with the necessity for them to have a great deal of fertilizer and herbicides and pesticides to put onto their products, that they're going to be able to grow their products so much more readily. And of course, now they're going to be able then to work themselves out of poverty. Genetic engineering offers the hope for the people of Africa and the people of third world nations throughout the world. Now, what's wrong with that, Jerry?
Well, it depends on which crop she's looking at and which picture she's looking at. First of all, one of my biggest criticisms of that kind of defense is that folks aren't sitting back and looking at the very large picture. I would agree with her wholeheartedly that changes that we make in individual food crops in order to increase, for example, the proportion of protein in wheat kernels, or the proportion of vitamin A in certain yam roots and so on in Africa, is a noble cause. Putting double the amount of vitamin A in a carrot, for example, to eliminate blindness in areas of the world where there is such a tremendous vitamin A or beta-carotene deficiency, is a noble cause. If indeed you're looking at a point mutation for changing a specific trait to increase vitamins, for example, in something that is genetically weaker in one particular area, I would say, go for it. Check to see what the effects are on the rest of the genome, if any. Check to see whether or not that might produce too much beta-carotene at times. Do thorough research.
Hold that thought for just a moment as we bring our other station right back on with us here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Jerry Guidetti, and we're actually going to be talking about genetic engineering. And I asked Jerry the very pointed question that the argument is made so often: isn't it wonderful, you know, we can genetically engineer crops so that they can actually produce much more? In other words, they can increase the production sometimes tenfold, that we can do away with the necessity for herbicides or pesticides or even much fertilizer, that we can actually allow people in the poor nations of the world to begin to work their way out of poverty, to be able to produce much more in the way of their crops. Certainly, who could be against, say, a man who's growing maize, or which we call corn in Africa, and of course he's now able to produce 10 times as much with these genetically engineered crops. And Jerry was beginning to tell me what was wrong with that sort of sophisticated argument that is being used today to justify genetic engineering. And she points out that there are certain specific things that we could do, like perhaps increasing the amount of vitamin A in certain products that would help as far as blindness is concerned. But pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure. We have to make a distinction between the kinds of genetic engineering that you and I have spoken about on other programs and in my writings before, the kinds of genetic engineering that are designed specifically to limit the growth of a plant, to limit the availability of seeds to individual farmers and so on, to put the control of those seeds in the hands of the seed producer, which is usually a large agricultural or chemical corporation, and the kinds of changes that are genetically engineered into plants in an attempt to simply accelerate the rate of change that naturally occurs during normal reproduction of a plant, when an egg and it's an ovum and a seed, but when the female portion of reproduction occurs in plants and the pollen grain from the male plant or male flower get together, there are all kinds of genetic changes that occur that allow a crossing over between genes from one side to the other during meiosis, and you end up with offspring that have traits different from either of the original parents alone, similar to what we do. Now, this is a natural thing. This happens. This is part of natural evolution. People get all unglued over that word, but in fact, genes evolve, and what happens is the offspring that have the best combinations of traits are the ones that then go on. The taller, stronger bear or horse or plant or whatever would likely have benefits that the shorter, runted horse or whatever does not have. And it's the same thing with plants. And those that, for example, in Africa are drought tolerant might indeed do better in areas that have insufficient water supply. And so these naturally occurring evolutions are what we would like to look toward to accelerate or to pinpoint and help other things do better. So what's wrong with introducing a natural gene or a natural mutation to a group of plants in an accelerated fashion in order to reintroduce drought tolerance to a species that may have been evolving, it may have been evolving out of, or so on, make some drought tolerant wheat and so on. However, there is a big difference between that kind of mentality and goal and the goal of making a series of plants completely dependent upon the chemicals provided by a particular chemical conglomerate. And that, sir, is what is happening today. It's been dubbed trader technology. It has disassembled the natural disease resistance, for example, of a plant, genetically disassembled it, and then in order to turn it back on again, to give that plant the God-given ability to defend itself against different onslaughts in the environment, you have to bathe that plant 3, 4, 5 times a season with their chemicals. Now, I would suggest to the individual who wrote that scientific journal that she is absolutely correct in theory about the potential for genetic modification of foods to help people, but I would ask her to please do your homework and find out what else is out there and what the whole big picture is. If you get 10 times the yield in corn, then you are feeding it multiple times the natural nitrogen that it normally gets out of the soil. You are going to have to fertilize that corn. Unless you have introduced nitrogen bacteria that have the capability of converting gaseous nitrogen in the soil into a chemical form of nitrogen taken up by the plant. This is natural in peas and beans and other legumes. However, it does not naturally exist in corn. And one of the projects I was working on is, can we further elucidate how these nitrogen bacteria populate roots and root hairs, for example, in order to introduce that nitrogen capacity, nitrogen conversion capacity, to other plants such as corn. But the reality is, Dr. Stan, today, in order to get 10 times yield, you need to put multiple times fertilizers, and I'm not going to say 10 times because it depends on the fertilizer, and that comes down to a company or 3 or 4, and it comes down to water contamination from nitrates in water supplies, which are downright hazardous to young animals and infants, human infants, and all of the runoff that creates, and so on. So it's, again, I would ask critics who don't see the big picture to please take a look at the big picture, and I could, if they contact me, I would be more than happy to give them multiple sources to go to find out how this technology has gone awry. She's right in that we cannot be scared of everything. We cannot deprive people of the right to grow seeds that are more productive. However, you and I have discussed before on the air that every time we make a change, especially an artificial change in a genome, we have to be certain, darn certain, that that change isn't creating changes somewhere else down the natural computer, that is the chromosomes, inside individual cells throughout.
My understanding is that sometimes when they are actually doing this genetic engineering, they will use some sort of an antibiotic-resistant gene or something of this sort, and that sort of makes... Could you pick up that idea?
Sure. I've done this myself. In order to get genetic material put into other organisms, to get the genes that we want, we would have to create whole gene libraries of the specific sequences that we wanted to take out of our experimental organism. Maybe it was a bacteria. And then take these pieces out using chemical scissors called enzymes, excise them out of parts of the gene, and reproduce them as libraries so that we have so many billions of them that we can then kind of chemically shotgun them at our target organism, which might be a plant cell or it might be a yeast cell, for example. I've worked with both. And then how do you know which ones of your yeast or plant cells have taken up the genes, the sequences that you want? Well, the way we do it is we introduce a gene for tetracycline resistance, for example.
And for our listeners, that tetracycline
is an antibiotic.
Right.
We introduce a gene to give it tetracycline resistance. And then, so that it doesn't, and I mean, this is a biosafety technique, to keep it from escaping out into the laboratory, into the water supply, into anything, and a means for us to screen for the presence of the gene that we have placed in it. Is we just make up our laboratory medium, our food, for the plant or yeast cells, and we put tetracycline in it. The only cells that will grow up in the medium that we've made are those who have the tetracycline-resistant genes. Otherwise, they'll be killed off.
Well, now, how about what happens when we eat that plant and we get the tetracycline-resistant genes in our intestine?
Okay. Well, don't forget, this is the research part of it. And, in the laboratory, this was a big argument. I should get to the bottom line instead of taking you through the years of evolution here. It is one of the major arguments that have been hurled at molecular biologists is the fact that they were introducing so many antibiotic-resistant genes. And so the industry, and I think that was only 2002, 2003, someone came up with a means of having, instead of a negative screening agent, such as it will not grow in tetracycline, have a positive gene put in, which is it will grow on mannitol, you see, so that you end up introducing this this other agent called mannitol, which is not a dangerous compound, versus something like tetracycline that could be. But you are absolutely correct. We have out there already so many organisms that are carrying tetracycline-resistant genes.
And, of course, for our listener...
And every cell of that plant.
And so, well, for our listener out there, what they've done is they've just changed the genetic makeup of these plants that I believe God created, and now we're going to try to improve on it, but we've had to put in there antibiotic-resistant genes. So, of course, what impact can that have on us? Do we have any idea? Have we done any studies to know what impact that will have on the human being?
No, and see, the point is, in our arrogance, we're claiming that it's not going to have any impact, but in fact, that Terminator technology you and I talked about, these seeds were devised in that original patent, which number I gave you not too long ago. They were devised to be soaked in a chemical agent to turn the genes on, and that agent that was proposed in that patent by the United States.
And of course, that was
tetracycline.
Right, and if we were going to soak them in tetracycline, that was and then going to turn on the genes. And well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, and we'll welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules, preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute, and we're talking about genetic engineering. And, of course, one of the things that we're talking about, really, is the fact that certain corporations will create seeds, and, of course, if you grow their seeds, then you have to buy their other products, and one of them would be something called Roundup Ready Crops. And the idea is, of course, that now you can actually spray this plant with Roundup, and Roundup, which ordinarily kills everything, will no longer, of course, kill the plant. So now you can kill the weeds. You don't have to worry about weeding. You just go ahead and spray that plant with the Roundup, and then, of course, it's gonna be fine. But of course, you buy their seed, then you have to buy their spray. What's wrong with that? That sounds like a great idea. I hate weeding the garden.
And the big thing that's wrong with it is, well, several things. But one, I could go on, but we don't have enough time, Stan.
Well, that's but remember, now I'm playing the devil's advocate. I want you to explain
right,
to our listeners
exactly.
What's wrong, because it really sounds so great.
Oh, yeah, right. But the Roundup Ready, or the Roundup Resistance gene that is introduced into the plant is introduced into every single part of the plant. Does anyone know what the effect of that Roundup Resistant gene is on parts of our body? No. I'm not going to have people pushing panic buttons saying it causes cancer, it causes this, it causes the other thing. I'm not going to tell you that because I don't know. We don't know. Okay? I don't think there's been enough research to determine this. But, for example, there is Roundup Resistant canola seed, which is licensed from Monsanto in order to grow it. And there is Roundup Ready soybean, and there's corn, and so on. Well, not only do you have that question about that gene being in that plant, but you also have the question about why would you put something in a plant that resists a herbicide when, in fact, the pollen blows in the wind, seed blow in the wind, it spreads out into nature. There are all kinds of closely related plants out in nature with which these plants can cross with. And that natural evolution that occurs between plants, crossing, exchanging genetic material and so on, and we end up getting a shift in the genes toward this Roundup resistance. Now what you've got, like you have all over the plains of Canada, you have Roundup resistant weeds.
Have we really got the Roundup resistance weeds now?
Have they, yes, we have them already.
So we've created a new super weed that they can't kill by the regular techniques.
Absolutely.
But what I want to know is, have they done extensive studies on animals to find out if they feed them these products, or whether or not they'll have an impact on the animals? And then what about the human beings? Do we really know? They can say it's just about like everything else, but
right.
Do they really know? I mean, the scientists have made many terrible mistakes in the past, and certainly when you're talking about tremendous profits that are going to be made by Monsanto and the other companies, have they done adequate, really scientific, long-term scientific studies to know that they can absolutely guarantee there is no problem at all? We saw what happened with the Vioxx. It probably killed between 50 and 80,000 people, you know, of heart attack or strokes. What do we know about the long-term results with eating products that have this Roundup resistance in every kernel of corn or every seed of canola or certainly let's see, what's it? Soybeans. The soy.
Right. Right. Soy. In a word, Dr. Stan, zilch. We know zilch about long-term anything. Here's what's working on the producer's side, and that is it's difficult to find a smoking gun. You know, what is it? Let's take a classic example, and it just happened this week. Out came the study this week that found out that an estimated 60,000 salmonella food poisonings here in the United States and Canada, 1,061 of those went to the hospital, were diagnosed with salmonella, two varieties, and just this year, and this was last year, 2004, just this year, we have finally traced it to Roma tomatoes. Now, the Roma tomatoes came out of California, not in another country. And here's the rub. The salmonella was not on the outside of the tomato, but it was on the inside.
How did it get on the inside?
And now they're finding out that they are actually going through the roots of the tomato up into the tomatoes. You can find this on the Center for Disease Control website.
Now how can they do that? Because in the past they've never been able to.
Absolutely. And maybe you have to break here. But
I'm afraid we have to.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, well, give the people something to look forward to when we get back. And again, when we do get back, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We're lucky to have Jerry Guidetti here because, of course, she really is a genetic scientist. She understands this. And she told me off the air that a lot of scientists are worried, but, well, a lot of them are afraid to speak out.
very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Have you ever wondered whether you're really getting the truth from the media? Have you ever thought that maybe somebody's controlling your reality? Well, there's going to be a meeting. It's going to be held at the Westin Hotel over by Great America. It's going to be on May 28th and 29th, and it's going to be at the Conspiracy Conference. Now, if you'd like to know more about the Conspiracy Conference, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. This is the fifth exciting year they've had this. Dick Gregory is going to be there, Nick Begich. There's going to be Daniel Hopsicker, Jack McLam. I'm going to have a booth, although I'll not be speaking. You're going to see really the contrast between good and evil. The Conspiracy Conference is a great educational opportunity. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going May 28th, 29th. That's 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Dr. Jerry Quadetti of the ARC Institute, and she's a genetic scientist, and we're talking about really some of the things that are going on. So we were talking about this Roundup Ready, and then, of course, we were getting on into the tomatoes, and now apparently the tomatoes are beginning to pull the salmonella out of the soil. We've never had a situation before where certainly plants would tend to pull pathological bacterium. What have we done to the whole balance of nature?
Now, you see, you are asking the right questions, and that is one of the big questions in my mind that I need to research right now to find out what happened. Because I can tell you, when you do work at an advanced level, you can spend 5 or 6 months just textbook studying the interactions that occur between the microscopic root hairs on a root and the environment around the root in the soil. And I did just that, took a course in advanced root biochemistry, plant root biochemistry. And I can tell you that the signals that have to go back and forth between the rhizobium bacteria, which are natural inhabitants in legume roots, or Brady rhizobium species in legume roots, the signals that have to go on between the two of them were something that I was attempting to find out in the laboratory, because, again, we would love to be able to get these bacteria to enter the roots of corn, for example, to bring it chemical nitrogen so we wouldn't have to put in nitrogenous fertilizers on the soil, make it possible to grow high-protein corn all over the world without having money and so on for fertilizers. So you see, there are good things that could possibly come out of this. Now, the question I have is, normally, pathogens, as you say, are not taken up into a root. into a tomato. Now, in the case of salmonella, that's something that grows at 35.7 C, which is normal body temperature, approximately 98.6 Fahrenheit.
And it would be found very commonly in fertilizers.
Absolutely. Also. Yes, and so they're taken up, apparently the salmonella is being taken up into the tomato plant. So my question is, first question, is the Roma tomato species that has been found now to have the salmonella inside the tomatoes through the roots, is that a genetically modified plant? Have we changed its genes somewhere to increase the numbers of tomatoes or the timing of the harvest or the thickness of the skin or whatever? Have we changed it in such a way that we also affected the root-soil interface to the degree that the salmonella organisms were able to enter the root and be taken up into the fruit? Now, normally when we get a pathogenic contamination of plants, and people are watch some doctors call you and tell you, no, Jerry doesn't understand, it's salmonella from the field, from amphibians, from birds, and so on, getting into the cracks in the tomato after rain. Wrong. That occurs. But in this case, the salmonella were brought up into the plant. And if you don't believe me, go to CDC's website, and you know they are extremely conservative. They're excellent scientists there. And you will read it yourself that they have been taken up into the plant. That means they found it elsewhere in the plant. Now, that to me is one gigantic alarm bell, one red flag that says, uh-oh, what have we done? And that's that remote change, perhaps, in the genome that I have alluded to for the past 5 years, that we arrogantly say the tomato plant is essentially the same because all we did was change one gene in it. Well, a cup of coffee is essentially the same if we put one drop of cyanide in it, is it not? And what's the difference?
I hope you'll pull that down off of the CDC website and maybe email or send it to me.
I will certainly do that for you.
I have to be on the front lines of this, and I want to have these things at my fingertips. But really what we're doing is we're really trying to replace this wonderful, wonderful plan we have in nature, that I believe that God created this perfect order and everything, and now we're going to make it better. But I think between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I'm just real curious about the symptoms that might come up in a person after the salmonella poisoning from the Roma tomatoes that she decided.
Sure. You would, well, Dr. Stan could answer this for you, too, but you would have nausea, vomiting, sometimes diarrhea, sometimes fever as well. And it depends on what dose you got, how long your symptoms last. Generally, if you don't get a high dose, you get over it unless you are immunologically suppressed or you're ill with something else, or children, babies, for example, can get very ill. But that's it. Dr. Stan, you can go ahead and add to that.
It's the thing you really think of is an infection of the intestine and severe diarrhea. So it's not something you want. And you know, I love tomatoes, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're suddenly going to have to wonder, well, are these the genetically modified tomatoes that now where they have the salmonella in the plant, and from there it gets into the tomato? And when we begin playing God, Mike, we get into real trouble.
Yes, anything else? We're not God.
That's right.
Right.
But we've got a lot of people out there in the scientific field who believe that they actually have the ability to change, you know, what we have and make it better. And perhaps in some instances they do, but in some instances they may create terrible problems. There's one thing about breeding plants. There's nothing wrong with breeding plants, and we've done this for a long period of time with the pollens, and we've come up with some great things. But now we're going far beyond breeding into something entirely new. We've opened a door. You know, as somebody once said, Pandora's out of the box.
Right.
You know, the toothpaste is out of the tube. How do you get it back in again? Mm-hmm. And you don't.
Yep.
Precisely.
Oh,
as a matter of fact, when you do go, Mike, to the CDC website and you check this out under the, you know, tomatoes and salmonella, please note that they do make the comment, and that same comment appeared in the Reuters article. They do make the comment that the only way you can kill salmonella inside a tomato is to cook it. And that, unfortunately, puts us in the position of, is this the tip of the iceberg? Should we expect that any commercially bought tomatoes may indeed have salmonella or other microbes inside them that are no good for us? Do we really have to cook all of our tomatoes, killing much of the vitamin C, or do we want to eat them raw so that we can enjoy not only the flavor, but the vitamins that come from eating a raw tomato? And so that's a very big if. This is a big red flag. I hope it's extremely isolated. I hope they end that line of tomatoes until they have answers to the question. And I think we have some real concerns here.
That's a great story. Anything else, Mike?
Yeah, she was talking about the crops in Canada, the problems and experiments. And I wanted to
super weeds.
About the marijuana crops. They have some large farms for marijuana. Are they doing anything with those?
I know nothing of marijuana. The wrong lady here.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. So I think that really what we're talking about is a gigantic experiment. And, of course, the subjects of this experiment are the American people. My understanding is that over in Europe, why the people are just saying, we don't want these genetically modified crops over here. Have they been able to force them? And I know that they're trying to use the World Trade Organization and all this pressure being put on the European countries to actually accept the genetically modified foods. But over there, I think the people are a lot smarter than they are here. They're concerned about this new technology.
That's right. They have been fighting it with both feet down. And if you will look at another link I have given you, certainly the ARC Institute's website, arkinstitute.com, and etcgroup.org, and go to their news buttons, and you'll see it in several languages, Spanish, and I think they have French there as well. Some of their white papers on some of these things. What these folks do is they go to these global conferences. When you read what happened February 7th, that Canada walked into this global conference on, I believe it was biodiversity was the topic of this global conference, and Canada, according to their report, was all prepared to push forward adamantly the Terminator technology. It was to go commercial right now, and that they were to squash all opposition and all consensus opposed by Europe and every place else. This is the U.S. government, and now we've got Canadians involved with it, too, trying to get this Terminator out there. Canada, of all places, should know better, and yet it was their Supreme Court who turned around and found Percy Schmeiser guilty of using Monsanto's Roundup Ready canola seed, when in fact Percy swears, and he's 75 years old, swears that he never used it. It blew onto his field, and the courts in Canada, Supreme Court, ruled that it did not matter how it got on his field. He was guilty of using that technology without paying for it.
And, of course, what was this the genetically modified what,
yes.
Canola? What was it?
It was Monsanto Ready canola seed. I'm sorry, Monsanto Ready. Roundup Ready canola seed that is licensed for use by Monsanto. And you can even check out that information both at etcgroup.org or at percyschmeiser.org. And it's S-C-H-M-E-I-S-E-R.org. This has been going on now for several years. He's lost every battle. It is the most pitiful thing. In other words, if this stuff blows onto your tomatoes, into your fields, wherever, you are guilty of theft. And that's how powerful these organizations are becoming with the courts and with governments. This is about money. This is about monopoly. This is about concentration of all of the food sources in the hands of a handful of corporations.
Well, now, of course, basically the whole idea is that you have to buy the seed from Monsanto. You can't actually, how about it, can you grow a crop and then save the crop, save the seed afterwards to grow it again?
No, you're not allowed to do that, and you have to sign that as part of the technology agreement. As a matter of fact, governors of many of the U.S. Midwest states have actually made the statement on their websites, I have read them, recommending that the farmers in their states do not sign these contracts. And you can check it out. I haven't been there a long time. It's not one of my favorite sites, but check out Monsanto's website. They used to have a copy of that contract up on their website. It may not be there anymore.
In other words, you cannot, of course, save your own seed. You
no.
have to keep buying it from them.
Absolutely.
And, of course, then of course they're going to make a tremendous profit on that. And then you have to use their Roundup to actually spray the fields.
Right. And that particular chemical is made generically, but you have to buy it from them through their licensees with their brand name on it. So that's a very sad thing as well. But please know that this is only one corporation. They have now, they've all seen the light, if you will, many of these chemical companies, and they have gotten on board with this and have developed their own genetically dependent, chemical-dependent or chemical-junkie seeds and plants that are going to require, just in order to grow them through a normal cycle, 3, 4, 5, 6 times spraying with their chemicals in order to turn God-given natural genes on. I think that is such a despicable use of knowledge by humans. I'm sorry I can't hold that back, but that's how I feel about it. We should be working for the betterment of mankind, not for the massive profits. Every company needs to have profits in order to continue their R&D, their research and development. Everyone deserves to make some profit. But how much is enough? Do we have to pay people $35 million a year, $50 million a year, $128 million a year in order to keep their skills? Excuse me?
You're talking about the payment for the CEOs.
For the CEOs,
right,
correct.
Right, and I know that certainly some of the drug companies that we're hearing about, they have to have profits.
Yes.
I know in the one book we have by Dr. Angel, why this president of one drug company, and I've forgotten which one it was, he got $74 million in payment and then another $74 million in the stock options for his fine work. You know, that was just for 1 year. So I think that sometimes we get into an obscene situation. I believe in the free enterprise system.
Yes.
But I don't believe, of course, in endangering the health of the people. Now, we don't know what the long-term effect of these genetically modified foods is. And have they done really independent animal studies, or have these all been done by scientists who are beholden to the companies? And, of course, if they tell the truth, they lose their jobs.
Here's a bigger, and again, we could do 10 programs.
Well, Jerry, I'm looking forward to doing 10 programs with you.
Oh, thank you. But reality is, in U.S. universities now, especially the land-grant colleges, monies are provided for research by many of these chemical companies, doing research that is essentially overseen by and directed by scientists from inside their companies. And so here you are, you're president of a university, you have a weak science department, you want to have a strong science department, along comes some agrochemical firm who offers to build you a grand new genetic science center with state-of-the-art equipment. This is happening all over America. And they are underwriting it, and they are building the building for you and putting in the electron microscopes and all of the ultracentrifuges for your molecular biology and all the equipment you could handle. And this is doing it, and the university can bring in all of these great science students, and we could train them. Mind you, we're also training foreigners from overseas who aren't members of this country at all, and we're giving them the same very powerful techniques. I'm not arguing against it, but letting you know that this is being amplified out to the world with this whole procedure. And so we've got a concentration now of corporate money in all of the universities. So now, you're a scientist, and you want to get your PhD, and you are looking for a topic, and you have an advisor who says, well, we're currently working on Brady Rhizobium in thus and such a soybean, blah, blah, da, 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 and you're welcome to join that and answer this question or look for that gene. And you say, no, I'm not particularly interested in that. Well, wait a minute, that's what the grant was for.
And of course, and the other thing is that the problem with all of this is that, you know, if you come up with results that, you know, are critical of the corporation that's paying your bill, large fees, well, what do you think is going to happen? We've got Scott calling from Monterey. Let's see if we get his question in.
Sure.
Scott, do you have a quick question for us?
Quick question, yes. I think it was partially answered. The seed from these GMO crops, are they? I heard they were sterile, actually, and they cannot reproduce. Well,
that's a question. Okay. I don't think the Terminator technology has actually been deployed yet, has it?
Right. No, but here's what it is, Scott. Many of these modified plants are not able to be saved and planted again because they do not breed true the second time around. Therefore, they effectively are useless to you. You'll get a tomato plant with no tomatoes or tomatoes the size of marbles.
And, of course, they do have other technology.
And Terminator's coming. It's going to be here so shortly.
Thanks very much, Scott, and thank you so much, Jerry. I'm looking forward to our next program. But our guest is Jerry Guidetti, and we're talking about, of course. Oh, let's get a quick your website now, or your telephone number.
It's ARKinstitute.com. You can reach me at 800-255-1912.
Hold on. I'm going to put you on right after this because I want to get that out.
That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, In Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going to the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
And this is Dr. Stan here, and of course we've been talking with Jerry Guidetti about this whole idea of genetic engineering, and Jerry's going to be with us in just a moment and tell us how we can get in touch with him, ARK Institute, how to get to our website. But I just want to mention a few things that we actually carry along this line. We actually have a book called GMOs, Beware the Coming Food Apocalypse, which is a very, very short and inexpensive book, but it gives you a good overview of this. This is GMOs, Beware the Coming Food Apocalypse. We carry the Seeds of Deception by Jeffrey Smith, which we think is an excellent hardcover book that gives you a great deal of detailed information on really what's going on. And then, of course, we carry a four-tape set on genetic engineering. You need to get this information because nobody is responsible for your health but you. And understand there are people out there who have a different agenda, a different worldview. That's a genetic engineering, a four-tape set. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Jerry. I never forget to get the telephone number and the and of course, the website out, but I put this off until the very end. I forgot all about it. I was so interested in the topic. Jerry, let's get your telephone number and your website out.
Sure. It's 1-800-255-1912. 1-800-255-1912. The web address is ARK Institute, all as one word, .com. And if you want to get a catalog and know something more about the ARK Institute's collection of non-GMO seeds for your own food garden to put in your freezer, to store for years, to never buy another seed again, just call the phone number and look on the ARC Institute's website. All the information you need to protect yourself is there.
I need to be one more time, the telephone number and the website to get the ARC Institute's collection of seeds. These are, of course, vegetable seeds, so that you can grow your own things. Go ahead.
Absolutely. It's 1-800-255-1912. And the ARC Institute, A-R-K, Institute.com. Institute is I-N-S-T-I-T-U-T-E. ArcInstitute.com.
Okay, fine. Thank you so very much, Jerry. We'll
Thank
talk to you,
you
later.
Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Of course, that was Jerry Guidetti, and of course, he was a genetic engineer, taught for many years at the university level, and suddenly began to realize what she was into, and of course, dropped out, and now, of course, she has her own business, and we've had very, very good reports from the people who've gotten a hold of Jerry. Go to her website, get the information. I think that story about the tomatoes is really frightening, because what are they doing to the other vegetables? Are they going to carry other pathological diseases that will make you ill as well? Why we're tampering with what God hath wrought, and I really fear for the future. Because, of course, we have people in the universities who have no moral foundation. Let's try it and see what'll happen. Well, then, of course, you need to understand the spiritual nature of what's going on. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it and read it. And you can get the book. You can get the video, you can get the audio tape, or get them all together in the Brotherhood of Darkness special. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will certainly want to get our 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley, our 4-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance. You'll want to get the videos we're offering, Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2. That Megiddo 1 is 2.25 hours, is very professionally done, going into the background of the biblical prophecies. Megiddo 2, 3 hours, very professionally done, and I have a small part in that as I talk about the Georgia Guidestones. And the plan to kill off the vast majority of the American people. You'll see the Guidestones back in Elberton, Georgia, where they talk about maintaining the world population at 500 million at constant balance with nature, and that means over 90% of the population is going to disappear, and there really are people. There really are people who have a different agenda. So that's Megiddo 2, and then, of course, the video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour versions of this great, great, and wonderful video you'll certainly want to get. And we have it, of course, not only in video, but it's going to be available in DVD as well very, very soon. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will certainly want to get go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can, of course, listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get much accomplished, but there on the internet, either directly there, the archive programs, or the other networks that we're on as well, you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day. And then, of course, pull down our newsletters, read those newsletters, copy them, get them out across America. Try encourage other people to listen to our programs, listen to our shortwave programs as well. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to remember Radio Liberty in your prayers, because we're on the front lines of this spiritual battle for the souls of men, for the survival of Western civilization. And so until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be back with you again. Darcy Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.